This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Tom Devine is the Government Accountability Project's legal director, which advises and represents and tries, often against the odds, to protect government whistleblowers. For 40 years, he's helped over 7,000 of them defend themselves against retaliation, and he knows the law. He says the U.S. was the first in the world to grant whistleblower protections, but now its safeguards lag far behind those of other democracies. And what's worse, there's a caste system here. Government whistleblowers have reasonable protections in most every sector, but intelligence. Blow the whistle in that community on anything, and you never can come in from the cold.
An intelligence community employee, under their whistleblower rights, they first have to go to the institution that's allegedly engaged in the misconduct. And that means they can't blow the whistle confidentially or anonymously. Secondly, they have to give all of their evidence of the institutional misconduct to the institution they're accusing. And then they have to get permission in order to share that with Congress or even the intelligence committees in Congress, which are constitutional watchdogs of intelligence abuses of power. And you can't do that until the alleged wrongdoer has seen all the evidence, had a chance to destroy the documents, knows who you are and can discredit you, and then gives you permission. To me, this isn't really a whistleblower law. It's like turning yourself in.
We're dealing with national security, right? Information that could have a material impact on the safety of the nation.
Well, if it's going to threaten national security, the information should be classified. But there shouldn't be a national security shield for all abuses of power. National security isn't a blank check for impunity. The specific type of evidence can be protected, but people shouldn't be gagged or restricted from warning the public when their national leadership is selling them out.
Now, this situation, the one that we've been watching play out this week, you say this is evidence of how the system works. You've just described a system that doesn't work.
I think what's happened is our constitutional system of checks and balances worked because Congress was determined and persevered in getting to the bottom of this. The system worked in spite of the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act. If you're comparing the rights under that law to those by non-intelligence workers, it's like comparing a fig leaf to a tuxedo. This is a bad joke.
So let's go back to Thursday's House Intelligence Committee hearing. Joseph McGuire, the acting director of National Intelligence, called the whistleblower's complaint unprecedented because it raised the issue of executive privilege. And again, he seemed to draw a distinction between the concerns of the intelligence community and the prerogatives of the White House, right?
Yes, he did. And your executive privilege is unusual in a whistleblower complaint because normally federal workers aren't blowing the whistle on the president.
What did you make of his interpretation and of his action to take this complaint outside of the usual channels?
Well, as our national security staffer at Gap has said, Irvin McCullough, he was caught between a rock and a hard place. This was an unprecedented situation. Mr. Trump is famous for knee-jerk attacks on anyone who threatens him. And he wanted to make sure that he'd crossed all his T's, dotted all of his I's, wasn't taking any chances on something that he didn't have the expertise for. In my opinion, he should have just followed the law. which didn't have that exception, said you have to ask the president if the president's the one engaged in misconduct. The law says you shall transmit any intelligence abuses to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just being cautious and careful.
You don't blame him for that. A lot of Democrats in the Intelligence Committee hearing did.
I don't blame them for being frustrated, but I think what's more significant from Mr. McGuire's testimony is that he affirmed that the whistleblower was doing the right thing.
I think he followed the law every step of the way.
Rather than acting as a political hack the way the president had trashed. And he pledged that there can be no retaliation against this person. And I'll tell you, that's the rare exception to the rule. Most intelligence community whistleblowers are just smashed if they challenge abuses of power.
And he conceded to Representative Terry Sewell, a Democrat of Alabama,
the chilling effect that it will have on others in government who may witness misconduct, but now may be afraid to come forward to report it.
Congresswoman, I think that's a fair assessment. I don't disagree.
You are more in touch with whistleblowers past and present and possibly future than anyone else I could summon up. Do you think there has been a chilling effect?
Absolutely, and it's a long-term chilling effect. At the Government Accountability Project where I work, we call whistleblowing the sound of professional suicide. And the power structure does everything possible to destroy anyone who effectively challenges institutional abuses of authority. They have to, or else they would be held accountable for breaking the law, and they wouldn't be able to continue breaking the law. This is scorched earth conflict of the highest stakes, and whistleblowers should be very wary of acting on these through the proper channels. One of our clients, Tom Drake, acted through all the proper channels, and he was supposed to be a confidential whistleblower. The Department of Defense Office of Inspector General, without any evidence that he had engaged in misconduct, turned him into the FBI, which prosecuted him and sought 35 years incarceration under the Espionage Act.
The government alleged he was a source for a series of Baltimore Sun stories in 2006 and 2007 looking at the NSA.
It's not just a chilling precedent, it's a freezing precedent.
You think that what's been going on this week might offer a bit of a thaw then, perhaps, because at least it's focusing on the risks they face?
How often does it happen that there's a global spotlight on abuses of power by a president, like in this case? For the normal scenario where someone is opposing abuses of power, like maybe torturing someone and violating their rights, we warn whistleblowers that their rights under the Intelligence Community Act are almost like a trap.
So do you think that McGuire can and will do enough to protect whistleblowers in the intelligence community as he seemed to assure Adam Schiff on Thursday?
Do I have your assurance that the whistleblower will be able to testify fully and freely and enjoy the protections of the law?
Yes, Congressman.
Well, no one has absolute authority, but his leadership will make a big difference.
Do you think the whistleblower will come to Congress?
Well, the whistleblower has requested that, but some whistleblowers they say, this is the right thing to do, and I'm going to stick my neck out, and I hope the law will support me. The anonymous whistleblower's lawyers are being much more careful. They're making sure that they do everything by the book. And so far, this whistleblower has been quite effective following all the rules, in spite of them. But what it's taken is a partnership between the very weak legal rights and extremely determined congressional oversight. And frankly, you can have the latter with or without a law. So I don't give the law too much credit, but I'm kind of proud of Congress the last 2 weeks.
It's no surprise that this week the president questioned the patriotism and the origin of the whistleblower. You hear those talking points in people like Fox News personality Steve Doocy.
The whistleblower had no direct knowledge of it, heard about it somehow, and the inspector general of the intel community said, you know what, we have looked at this whistleblower and we feel that this person has a political bias for a rival candidate of Donald Trump.
We call the first law of retaliation shift the spotlight from the message to the messenger, investigating and trashing his or her integrity, professional history, sexuality, motives, bias, anything that'll smear that person so that people won't believe him or her. Dirty laundry might become the whole issue rather than the abuse of power they're exposing. I'm encouraged that Chairman Cummings and the House Committee on Oversight and Reform has been working very seriously on upgrading the Whistleblower Protection Act here so that it's fifth generation. It might actually be credible.
What would the fifth generation of the law look like?
One is, unlike corporate whistleblowers or government contractor whistleblowers, federal employees can't seek justice against free speech retaliation from a jury trial in district court. They have to go to a highly politicized administrative board called the Merit Systems Protection Board, which in the Senate doesn't even have any members right now. Their due process rights are almost paralyzed.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
So you're suggesting they should be able to go to a regular court
and have justice determined by a jury of citizens whom the whistleblower is purporting to defend when he or her risks his professional life. That's where you'll get real justice. The second big weakness in the current law is it doesn't protect against retaliatory investigations that are almost a knee-jerk reaction. And those can morph into criminal referrals. And it means that there's a backdoor way around the employment rights of the Whistleblower Protection Act. You can try to get somebody prosecuted for free speech that they couldn't be fired for. The third thing is to get a realistic chance for temporary relief for federal workers. These cases drag out for routinely for 2 to 5 years, some of them over a decade, and they don't have a functional chance to get them. And that means by the time that you've won your case, it may be too late. You've gone bankrupt, you've lost your family, you've lost your house, you're professionally blacklisted. The vindication is just kind of symbolic. We need those three additional teeth for the Whistleblower Protection Act to be genuine free speech rights.
Next administration?
Well, the House of Representatives is working on it very seriously in this administration, and then the Senate will be on the spot whether or not they're going to kind of back up their rhetoric supporting whistleblowers with credible rights. And if that happens, then President Trump will be on the spot. He ran as a citizen whistleblower who is going to drain the bureaucratic swamp of corruption in Washington, D.C. But, you know, you can't drain the swamp of alligators if you keep feeding the people who are doing the cleanup to the gators. And that's what's happening.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
Tom Devine is the Government Accountability Project's legal director.
Coming up, evidence makes clear there is no moral equivalency between Trump's predations and what he accuses the Bidens of, much less what they've actually done. Still,
this is On the Media.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.